Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for February the 4th, 2022. This is episode number 96. On today's show, we'll be talking about driving the Kia EV6, the result of our first Hyundai Ioniq 5 70 mile an hour range test, and the top fast charge network is named, but was the test fair? I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the voracious Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the international man of mystery, Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios. He puts together rousing and suspenseful videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Good morning. Happy Friday. So let's kick this off, I guess, with our comment of the week, or Katwa for short. So this week's comment comes to us from last Friday's live stream, and it's from Scott Berger, who quipped, "Toyota sells a self-charging electrified car, I think. Have you tested that?" So I believe at the time we were talking about camping off the grid.
Martin and, knows all about this one.
Right?
Oh, don't start like this. Come on. What are you doing to me?
So, yeah, we're talking about camping off the grid and how it might be more difficult in an EV because you can't carry electricity as easily as you can gasoline or diesel. Of course, this also refers to Toyota's, or maybe it was Lexus, whatever. There was a terrible ad campaign in the UK that I believe referred to hybrids as self-charging. Martin famously loved those ads. I don't know. You're holding back on me, Martin.
Wait, now they're back. Did you see Auto Express's headline about something like this?
Yeah, and that so now Kia are using it, and Honda have gone with the phrase self-charging hybrid, and it just I hate the fact that there are people out there who aren't watching this show because they're not like us, but one day they'll come to buy an EV and they might think that they're buying an EV when the salesman says it's self-charging hybrid, and I hate that. I think it's awful customer education completely the time when we need to be explaining to people a whole new lexicon of kilowatts and kilowatt hours and 90% state of charge and all of this and charging at home at DC and AC fast charging. It's the wrong time to be flogging off a few more of your shabby old hybrids because that's the technology you've got because you didn't invest in electric cars early enough. So yeah. And honestly, the other thing that they advertise over here is Toyota have a catchphrase, "We choose not to plug in." So that's their online campaign. "We choose not to plug in," because plugging in is awful, guys. If you plug in, you're an idiot. "We choose not to plug in." Plugging in's terrible, which is funny.
That's not going to age well.
I mean, someone's got to at one day say, "We choose to plug in." Look, I mean, consumers have a short memory. And if you're a Toyota fan, you're going to buy the next Toyota EV. Right. But it's fine. It just winds me up. So thanks a lot for that. Thanks.
All right. So let's get to what we've been driving this week. So this has been a real Hyundai Motors Company kind of week. Our top story and the car that adorns our thumbnail today for today's episode is the Kia EV6. And Tom, you were lucky enough to go on the EV6 first drive program in the hills of Sonoma County, California, where you got to drive both the rear-wheel drive and the all-wheel drive versions of the car in GT line spec. I believe there's three different trim levels. You can tell us what those are because they're kind of interesting names. So tell us, is the world ready for a $50,000 electric Kia?
Yeah, that was my question because, you know, these are expensive vehicles and Kia's kind of been known as a value brand, you know, and will people spend $50,000 plus on a Kia? Now, the car really was a great car. I mean, it's a repackage. I wouldn't say repackage. It's a different way to. Well, I guess I have to say repackage an Ioniq 5. You know, it's there's so many features that are the same. It's got the same powertrain. Even the infotainment system is basically the same. I'm actually driving an Ioniq 5 now. Kia just Hyundai just dropped one off for me to have this week. So it's like coming out of that and going into this, I feel like I'm in the same car. Other than the positioning is that the EV6 is more of like a sporty version of the IONIQ 5. The IONIQ 5 is more like a family hauling, you know, like really cool retro looking vehicle. And Kia went with like the sporty version. The interior, it just feels more like a sports sedan. It drives a little bit more like a sports sedan. The suspension's a little stiffer. But the one thing I will notice, and you know, everybody gets different takes on the vehicle. So I, as we've said before, you know, go out and drive the cars yourself. Don't listen to what I say like it's, you know, gospel or what Kyle says, because everybody has different experiences. And I'm saying that because some of the other journalists I talked to didn't share my opinion on this, but we did the drive where half the day we drove, and it's only an hour or so one way and an hour or so back, we drove in the all-wheel drive, a GT line, and then we drove. Then I drove back the day with the rear-wheel drive GT line. And after driving the all-wheel drive version in the morning and really getting on with the beautiful winding, twisting, you know, roads of Northern California and wine country, when I got in the rear-wheel drive version, it felt sloppy. I was correcting the car all the time, and you know, you kind of expect that the all-wheel drive version is going to, you know, handle better and just feel more planted, but it felt like there was a bigger gap than I expected. And and it was a little surprising. Now I will say that the all-wheel drive version was great. I mean, it was carving up the roads. I mean, it was, you know, it was doing all the work for me, honestly. And, you know, and I was pushing it as much as I could on public roads. And I mean, it was a fantastic driving experience. I just didn't get that with the rear wheel drive. As I said, you kind of expect it to be a little bit less, but it was disappointing to me. I'll put it that way. Even though I love the car, I think they look great. The interior is comfortable. You know, the user interface, I think, is pretty good. It's a little laggy. You know, the driving experience on the rear wheel drive version wasn't one step below, in my opinion, it was two or three steps below the all wheel drive version. So that was my take. Go drive them yourself. As far as some of the other things, like the regenerative braking system, rocks. It, you know, I was thinking about it last night when I was driving the IONIQ 5, which has the same. I think it's the best regenerative braking system on any electric vehicle right now. That I had said the Bolt was for a while, it has five different levels. Well, they say four different levels plus one pedal driving. There's like a freewheel coasting you could set it on, a level one regen, level two, level three, and then the I pedal, which is a one pedal driving mode. And you get to the modes with the paddle shifters. You have the paddle shifter on the left side of the steering wheel increases the regen, the one on the right decreases it. And what I love about that is on some of the cars that allow you to adjust regenerative braking, sometimes you've got to fiddle with the center infotainment display. And that's not something you really should be doing while you're driving. Go into settings, you know, E settings, and then drivetrain, and then adjust regenerative braking. You could do it really quickly with the paddles, and you could set it to the exact level that you like. And while a lot of us really love strong regen, I've talked to a lot of people that don't love strong regen, especially on long highway drives, that prefer to have it basically freewheel coasting. And then you could also pull the paddle in when you need to slow down, or even you pull it in and hold it and it'll bring it to a stop and hold you there. But when you release the paddle, you're still in the mode that you were driving in before. It doesn't automatically put you in the highest mode. So to me, I'm just enjoying the heck out of driving this IONIQ 5 right now. And it was the same in the EV6. And there's one other thing I want to mention. I was actually, that's what I'm going to mention next. After the day's drive was over, I kind of told Kia, look, I have to DC fast charge this. And it wasn't part of the drive and everything was done and dinner was starting. And I said, look, I'll skip dinner, but I really want to take this thing and record a DC fast charging session. So they let me take the car out for a little bit longer, and I was able to drive it down to 20%. I wanted to get it to 10%, but I got stuck in traffic on California freeways. So there's no, you're just stuck, and there's no way to bring the battery down when you're driving bumper to bumper at 10 miles an hour. So my plan was to charge 20% to 90% instead of 10 to 80. Now I know that charging curve won't be the same, but it'll still give us, you know, 70% of the battery, and we can analyze it and everything. So I plug in and immediately starts pulling 170 kilowatt. but after like a minute, it dropped down to 113 kilowatt. And then it held that to like, I think 60 or 70%, and then dropped down to like 53 kilowatt. And it held that until 87%. And at 87%, it dropped down to 1 kilowatt and held that for like 6 or 7 minutes. And then I just unplugged because, you know, we're getting nowhere at 1 kilowatt. So I recorded the whole thing. I actually sent it to Kia. Kia asked me for the recording. I contacted Electrify America and said, look, you know, I'm not sure who's responsible for this, but, you know, we did not get what this vehicle should do, and I'd like to know who to blame. So I sent the video to Electrify America. They're analyzing it. They came back and contacted me and said, look, you know, we're looking at it. Kia's looking at it. Now we're talking to Kia about it. And, you know, so we're going to have them send, we're going to try to have them send the exact vehicle that you drove to our center of excellence to analyze it. You see there, after 30 minutes of charging, I had gone from 20% to 85%. So it took a half an hour to add 65% of the battery, and the car is supposed to add 70%, you know, 10 to 80 in 18 minutes. So it was dramatically lower than what it should be. And, right. You know, the battery might not have been at the perfect operating temperature. I was driving it as hard as I could to warm it up. It wasn't too cold out there on the way until I hit that traffic jam and sat in it for like 20 minutes at the end. So it could have been a little of a problem with it not being perfectly warm, but it did start off at 170 and was charging at that for a little bit before it dropped down to 113. And there's no excuse for it to drop into 1 kilowatt. You know, at 87% and then just never getting higher than that. So, you know, I'm trying to get some clarity on this. You know, it's an early model. I don't know how much testing, I don't know how many vehicles Kia has sent to Electrify America and the other infrastructure companies to do this DC fast charge testing. We've seen this before when new cars come out, even when they're being sold the first couple of months, they don't necessarily charge the way they're supposed to. And, you know, it drives Kyle crazy. It drives me crazy. But then the manufacturers, you know, do some software updates or whatever, and it starts working. And, you know, Kyle's beat this drum a while saying, you know, these things, they shouldn't be on the road if they're not charging the way they're supposed to charge. But we know that this happens. It happens time and time again. So that's my my charging experience. I'm going to have that video up pretty soon. Actually, Ben Sullins beat me to getting my own video out because he asked me for the video recording so he could put in his EV6 review, and I gave him it. And so he actually has it up before I do. I've just been so busy here. I haven't had time, but I'm going to put that video up soon. And now that I have the EV, the Ioniq 5 here, and the charging should be basically the same. I'm going to do some DC charge recordings of that this week. And then we'll see how that is. And we'll compare them.
And was it sorry, Dom.
I was just going to say, you also have a 70 mile an hour test with that car. We're going to talk with Kyle soon about his test, but
haven't done it yet.
But you will be doing that though. Martin.
Absolutely, it's going to be super cold here, so it's going to be a real cold weather 70 mile an hour test. It's going to be in the 20s Fahrenheit when I do the test. I think it was a little warmer for Kyle, so you know, we're going to expect it's not going to perform as it would if it was 70 degrees, but we note that. And it's good to do cold weather and warmer weather tests. People drive these things all year round anyway. But go ahead.
Did it, was the charge curve, as in not a curve, like we see with the Ioniq 5, and it they're like step changes, and it steps down, steps up, rather than being a nice smooth curve. Was it doing that, as in it was doing what we would expect that platform to do, which is to step down quite sharply, kind of hit a cliff, or how was it behaving?
It basically held it as soon as I plugged in. Okay, it's 170, and then it went 113 the almost the whole way, then 57, and then one.
Okay, so that's not great.
It wasn't jumping. You
it's
know,
not so, a great charge curve anyway. That platform isn't really a curve.
Yeah, I don't think that this is representative of what it's going to be when they iron out the problems. There are some kind of problems. It could have been the car, could have been the charging station. I will say, while I was there, a guy pulled up in a Porsche Taycan and said to me, like, yeah, this whole – look at Kyle over there. This whole charging station, it's sometimes I get the full amount. Sometimes I get half. So we don't know. And that's why I talked to Electrify America about it. They said that, look, they pulled some data. The chargers are working fine. But they're gonna investigate what happened with my specific – charging session.
Okay. Hey, I mean, a friend of mine's got two. He's bought two over, because we've had the car for a while over here. And I think he on the day he picked it up, he drove straight to a 350 unit and plugged it in and did 10 to 90% in like 19 and a half minutes, which isn't far off like the record for that car. So it sounds like either a charger issue or a car issue, and is always the case. Both of those organizations are wont to blame the other one. You know, Electrify America won't want to say that their charging station wasn't right, and Kia won't, you know. But if it's proven, they probably will. Maybe even private, and they'll work with the engineers. But, you know, when people buy themselves a new car and it doesn't charge how it should, people always blame the charging station because this is their precious new toy. But it could well have been the car.
It could have been. And these are going to be in dealerships in like a week and a half. So, you know, yeah. So, you know, mid-February that these things are arriving in dealerships. So, you know, hey, get the software straightened out if it's on the car's end. I'm tending, you know, we'll see, but I'm thinking that it had to do with the car because, you know, it seems like this happens a lot with us. When we get cars before they launch, they're just not, the software is not perfect. And, you know, well, Martin will say, well, these things are out in Europe, so the software should be fine. It's different. You know, the different CCS1, CCS2, it's just tiny little software changes that could be, you know, what's restricting it from taking in what it should be taking in. And the fact that, you know, both Kia and Electrify America both asked me for my charging recordings and were like, look, you know, that'll help us try to figure this out. You know, leads me to believe that there hasn't been a lot of cooperation with Kia and Electrify America to this point, you know, which I don't have any proof of that. But if there was, if let's say Kia sent Electrify America one of these cars 4 months ago and said, look, get this thing right, we're launching in February, they wouldn't need my data. You know, so I'm thinking, and this does happen, and we talk about this a lot, that sometimes the manufacturers give Electrify America the cars months and months ahead of time, like Ford did with the Mustang Mach-E. They had Mach-E's at Electrify America half a year before they launched. But some automakers don't. Volvo didn't. Polestar didn't. Right. So, you know, it's there has to be cooperation. If you want to launch a car and have it charging perfectly months before the launch, ChargePoint needs one, Electrify America needs one, EVgo needs one, Greenlots needs one. You've got to send them out to these companies so they could do their in-house testing to make sure it's locked in on their network. And I don't think that's something that OEMs get yet. It's one of those things that they didn't have to do before. So yeah. It's not necessarily, you know, a priority yet for them that, you know, that there could be problems initially with how the car and the charging station each interpret the CCS protocol. It's not an absolute defined software where everybody just, it always works. No, people can make slight modifications, and that, like a computer program, if one line of code is off, you know, the program doesn't work.
I think I said this on the podcast before, but for new viewers or those that are, you know, have forgotten, maybe a year or so ago, I was talking to the CEO of a charging network over here. And they use the latest, greatest chargers, and I won't say what it is and who they are, but a Porsche, a brand new Porsche Taycan rolled up off the lot and plugged in. It wouldn't handshake. And of course, the guy is like, your stupid chargers won't charge my car. And as it was, I think, a software issue, as in they'd just sent the car out with the latest, greatest version of the Taycan software. And just something didn't work with that particular brand of chargers that, again, like those chargers are over the air updatable. The car is over the air updatable. It was fixed very quickly. But there isn't that conversation happening because there's a load of automakers and a load of hardware makers. And to have all of them talking to each other all of the time is that's what we want, but it's not happening at the minute. And these problems do get fixed. But and also, Tom, it could be that car that you drove is in the country as a very early, you know, version. The software could be an early version. And we know how big organizations work. It could just be that the press PR team that you deal with organized this wonderful event for you and all the other journalists to take the car out. But there's no line of communication between them and the nerds sitting in front of their computer somewhere. And it could have been like, oh, no, don't use that version of the software because we were just doing stuff for the US. Like, no. But, I mean, Kia could be wonderful and smooth and all the wheels are nice and greased. But you know how big organizations work, and sometimes they don't always talk to each other. So there's a lot of variables.
Absolutely. And I was asking for trouble because DC fast charging was not included in this press drive.
Well, right. That, yes, there you go.
You know, that was not part of the thing. I had to say, look, I have to do this. I'll skip dinner tonight, but I need to get a recording. So that's why I'm saying all that ahead of time. I'm kind of making excuses, I guess. But the fact of the matter is, it wasn't part of the drive. I did something outside of the drive. So maybe if it was part of the drive, they would have tested all the cars first. Maybe there would have been an over-the-air software. You know, who knows? But it didn't work the way it was supposed to. It took really long to charge. And it hit a wall at 87% where it dropped to 1 kilowatt, where, you know, the car is probably consuming that just during the charging process. So I could have just stayed there forever and it would have never reached 100%. But in any event, that's it. And the only other thing I do want to point out, I saw there were some comments here. If you remember last week's podcast, I said there's something about the EV6 that's deficient, that no other electric car ever was deficient in this way. Now I can talk about it. It was in my review. The EV6 does not come with any portable charging equipment. Nothing. You drive home with the car. It's up to you to figure out charging. So what a lot of people do when they get an electric vehicle is they get it. And, sometimes people just buy a car in the lot without even – they went in thinking they're going to buy a Sorento or something. And, you know, they're driving home with an electric car because it's so cool. You know, I wouldn't suggest that. Do your research first. But that happens, okay? So what people do is they have portable charging equipment that every single electric vehicle that has ever been sold in the last 15 years has in the back. Sometimes it's just a level one. Here in the U.S., it's level one, not in Europe. Europe, you always get the good, strong power. But we have level one here, which is 120 volt. It trickle charges the car. It adds 4 to 5 miles of range per hour. You can do that. You can live with that for, you know, a few weeks until you figure out, well, what do I want to install at my house? What kind of charging station do I want to get? So you don't get that with the EV6. So you drive home with your car, and if you don't have charging at home, you're out of luck. You're going to have to go to, you know, public charging stations until you figure out what you have at home. I think that's it's unfortunate that that's not included. I think we might get to a point 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now where everyone has EVs and everyone's been driving EVs, and we don't need to give them this portable charging equipment because they already have a charger. They had one for their last EV. But where we are now, most EV6 owners are going to be first-time electric vehicle owners. And let me read this. What's up to the point? This is just raw, mandatory type 2 and EV6. I'm not sure what he's saying there.
You always get it with a car. So, but what you're saying is you've always got it in a car in the US as well, and yet this is the first time you've seen it. So he's saying, look, it's mandatory over here. Well,
I wasn't saying that it wasn't mandatory. I'm sorry. I'm cutting you off, Martin. What I was saying is that you don't get type 1. You don't get level 1 chargers there. There's no such thing.
Right. Yeah. You get 240 current over in Europe.
You all have 240 current. Yeah. I wasn't saying you don't get charging equipment. I was saying you don't get a level 1 trickle charger that adds 4 miles per hour of charging because that just doesn't exist there. But in any event, it doesn't come with one.
This reminds me, earlier this week, Tom, we had a thread pop up in the mini section of sub-forum of the Inside EVs forum asking for a recommendation about a type 1 charger. But I believe Mini comes with them though, right?
Yeah, it does. Every car does.
But real quickly, for the EV6 owners that are out there that are getting a new car, it's good to have a portable, you know, charger cord to, you know, take with you on vacation or on trips. You know, you never know when you might actually just need an emergency, you know, boost of energy. So real briefly, what's your recommendation for those?
So, all cars come with at least a level one. So I don't know, maybe that Mini user, maybe he is burned out or he lost it, or maybe he bought a used one and the previous owner kept it and didn't give it to him when he bought the car. You know, there's not a lot of level one charging equipment on the market now because almost very few people buy them. I always tell people, before you do anything, go online, see if you can buy a used one, because some people that never use them sell them online and you might be able to pick one up for a couple $100. Clipper Creek makes really good level one EVSE. They're very expensive though. Clipper Creek's expensive, but they're really high quality units. I recommend getting those. You can get less expensive ones online. Most of them are from kind of no name Asian manufacturers that aren't safety certified. And I wouldn't plug that thing in my house and let it charge for 12 hours in a row overnight, you know, every single night. So, you know, I always recommend buy quality. You're going to pay $100 more, but things will last forever, right? And you're not going to have a fire.
Sorry to talk over you, but you want UL listed though, right?
Yeah, UL or ETL, a safety certification that's an established, company that checks these things out and makes sure that, you know, they're safe and that they're not, you know, crimped connections inside where that are going to, you know, open up after a year of use or something like that. I love when people, I kind of preach to buy safety certified and somebody will like say, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. I bought this one for $99 online. I've been using it for 6 months. It charges fine. And I'm like, yeah,
burned down my house yet.
Let's circle back in a year and a half and let's have a conversation. Tell me how well that thing's working because they all fail. I mean, people constantly tell me, yeah, you know, I thought I got a good deal, but, you know, 11 months in, it just burned out. Now I'm buying another one. So, buy a good quality one once and it lasts a really long time.
So on the EV6, Kyle, do you have any questions for Tom?
I've been lucky enough to spend a ton of time with EV6 a few days. So, yeah, know it pretty well. Awesome car.
Did you drive the rear-wheel drive?
Only drove the all-wheel drive version, but you can, when you drive it in eco mode, it forces itself to be rear-wheel drive.
Okay.
Which is roughly the same power as the rear-wheel drive.
I just thought that was interesting that he found such a difference in the experience between the rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive. It's like kind of remarkable.
That's how it felt to me. I was surprised.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. The all-wheel drive is the sporty one. It probably has a totally different chassis and suspension setup. On the roads where Tom was, they're super curvy, beautiful, winding roads. The rear-wheel drive just might be set up as a city commuter and highway commuter. It might be smoother in those scenarios. I don't know. I haven't driven them. I've only driven all-wheel drive, Ioniq 5 and EV6. And, love them both. Really great cars.
And the rubber's also better on the all-wheel drive GT line. You get the 20-inch wheels, slightly wider tires. So that added to it also. And, you know, it just – like I said, I expected less acceleration. It also felt the delta between like the acceleration when you really stepped on the all-wheel drive and the rear-wheel drive seemed bigger than I would expect it to be. You know, it just much less powerful, and the handling was I was disappointed in it. Whereas I was very impressed with the all-wheel drive version. I personally wouldn't get the rear-wheel drive version of the EV6. Whereas I would get a rear-wheel drive ID4,
right.
And I'm not even saying it's a better performer, but I kind of feel like when you get in the ID4, you don't expect it to be. But the EV6 is kind of like a sporty, you know, crossover. You get in it, and it makes you want to drive it. Fun. And I just felt like the rear-wheel drive didn't live up to that. That's all I'm saying. But the all-wheel drive definitely does. The thing's a blast to drive. Really fun to drive. Great road feel.
Kia in the US still have that Guinness record on their website, that Guinness World Record for the shortest charging time to cross the US in an EV. Somebody call the Kia website team and get them to delete that. It's now very
old. Yeah, I believe Taycan beat that.
I mean, it's not a record that should ever be set, let alone boast about. But yeah, the Taycan's beaten it by a country mile.
Yeah, but even on our Cannonball with the Taycan, we beat it. Model S stuff has beat it, but it's never been certified by this organization called Guinness World Records, if you've ever heard of it. And so now, you know, I don't know what they were doing with the kid because you could easily get this thing under 5 hours. So who knows what they were doing driving this thing across the country.
They need to give you one and do it upright.
I have no interest in setting the shortest charging time, only the fastest time.
Well, Wayne Gerdes, who did who set the record of the Taycan now, he's like been known. I've known Wayne for years. He's like, you know, been involved with electric vehicles for a long, long time. And he's known as like one of the best hyper milers in the country.
Yeah. Probably the best.
Maybe the best.
He doesn't mind being rear-ended.
He'll drive behind a truck and get like 100 miles an hour out of like a Toyota Prius, 100 miles per gallon Prius. Like he's crazy with how good he can hypermile. So that played in how well the Taycan did, because when you think about it, Kyle, when you're really 2 hours and 25 minutes or something, to go 2,800 miles, 2 hours, 25 minutes of charging, he had to pull some great efficiency numbers to be able to only do that. Because when you do the math,
keep in mind, it was also cold weather. So actually, we have a podcast called the Out of Spec Podcast. And we had Calvin
on yesterday, which the podcast will drop later on this week. Calvin runs PR. He's the spokesperson for Tycon. We talked about Wayne's run and like the intricacies of how he did it. And it was so cold out that even in range mode, the car wasn't preconditioning enough to get the fastest charging. Mm-hmm. So Calvin was like, Wayne kind of had to rip it a little bit to get to the chargers with a warm battery pack. Because the whole goal was, who cares what happens in the middle? It's you show up to a charger and you got to get the most, you know, efficient charging in terms of speed into that car. And really good effort. And I know Wayne has been working on this. I think he did 10,000 miles of prep ahead of time, logging every charging session, every stretch in this Taycan. And it wasn't just something where he just left and did this. He had been working on this for months and months and months. And yeah, it was an interesting story.
Wow, that's an amazing amount of prep. All right. Say, before we get to Kyle's time with the Hyundai Ioniq 5, Tom, I don't know if you want to say, have anything more about the EV6 you wanted to say.
No, that's pretty much it.
Okay. But you also put out a video this week on your State of Charge channel that answered a lot of questions people had about the Ford Intelligent Backup Power feature available for buyers of the Ford F-150 Lightning. So this is a feature that lets you power your house with a truck if the power goes out, which I believe there's a huge storm that's been crushing the U.S. And there may be some of you out there right now with that situation. So your video covered 15 questions. We don't need to talk about all of them, but I don't know if you wanted to touch on a couple that were, you know, people had the most interested in.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I have some more news to talk about that here on the podcast. So, yeah, I did everything you need to know about charging the F-150 Lightning video. And in the comment section, so many people are asking me about the intelligent backup power. I really wasn't planning on doing a video on that. But so many people said, look, like Ford really hasn't talked about this at all. Basically, they just showed videos. Yeah, you can power your house, but what's the details? So I said that'd be a good follow-up, and I got in touch with Ford, and they put me in touch with Ryan O'Grady. I think I saw his name is Ryan something. It's an Irish name. I should know that I'm Irish. But he's in charge of
all the Irish know each other, right?
Says yeah, Malogny.
Exactly. I know. God. And he's in charge of Ford Intelligent Joe Pro Power. And so I got together a whole bunch of the questions people asked me and asked him, and then I made a video out of that. And that has brought on way more questions. So I'm following up with Ford now and saying, look, we still, you know, look at all the questions. And they said, look, we've been monitoring it. We know that. So this week, Ford put out their own like video that kind of answered a little bit more questions. But I just followed up with Ford and said, look, this thing, you know, we still have so many questions. We need to do a follow-up. So I'm trying to arrange with them to do a midweek podcast soon. I'll talk to you guys later, where we get Ford on and we ask them questions. And I have a whole bunch of them lined up and we let our followers. I'm not 1,000% that's going to happen, but it's looking like it's going to happen. So I'll talk to you guys about that later. But I had questions like, you know, you have to get the Ford charge station pro in order to work. It's an 80 amp level 2 charge station, but it uses a CCS connector. So, you know, people were saying, is this a DC fast charger? It's not, it's an AC charger. Well, how does it use that connector? Sunrun, Ford's partner that's going to be installing these systems or selling you the kits that you need to have the system work, because you're going to have to buy a kit and have it installed. You don't just plug this thing in and it powers your house.
There's an extra
They have on their website that the Ford Intelligent Pro Power can charge any electric vehicle, not Intelligent Pro Power, I'm sorry, Ford Charge Station Pro can charge any electric vehicle sold in America. But it has a CCS connector. How's it going to charge a Nissan Leaf?
Oh.
You know, and how's it going to charge a Tesla?
I mean, adapter, I guess, with a Nissan Leaf?
What adapter?
They don't make a CCS to CHAdeMO adapter.
Yeah. So that was on Sunrun's website, not Ford's website. And then on Ford's website, it said you needed a 320 amp service in order to have Intelligent Backup Pro. So I asked them about that and they were just kind of like, yeah, that's really not correct. You don't need a 300, it's on your website. So 2 days later, Ford updated their website with new information. So like, you know, there's so much misinformation even with the 15 questions I did, Dom, there's more questions. So if you're interested in that system, head over to my my, or I posted it on Inside EV. You can read the article and view the video, and stay tuned because we're gonna. I'm trying to arrange a follow up where we can all ask for questions here and also take live questions from you guys
on
the system. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. So what do you think is the biggest misconception about the system?
Oh, God.
Help me. There's a lot. You had 200 more comments on this new video.
The thing that people, not misconception, but the biggest thing that people don't realize is there's going to be a lot of work getting your house ready to be able to do this. Okay. You know, you need Ford Charge Station Pro, which is the 80 amp charging station installed. Then you need to have the transfer switch installed. Then you need an inverter. Then you need a small battery installed in your house, because when the power goes out, you need some kind of power at your house to talk to the lightning.
Right, switch your systems over.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, this is not going to be inexpensive to install at your house, to buy the equipment and install it. Now, I did find out that nobody knew before this was that you will be able to install it yourself if you want. It kind of seemed like you had to have Sunrun install it, but you don't. You can buy this package, and if you're a licensed electrician or if you're someone that you think you know you can do it, you will be allowed to install the system yourself. It seemed as though Ford was going to make you buy the stuff from Sunrun and have them install it. That's not the case. You can buy the kit from Sunrun. You can install it yourself.
Awesome. All right. So, Kyle, you've had quite a week with the Hyundai IONIQ 5. The Out of Spec Reviews channel has 4 new videos featuring the car, including one feature featuring the owner of the car, telling the story of how he managed to find and buy it. Not to give it away, but he did pay over MSRP, which is something you said you would never do. But I bring this up because if you're interested in the IONIQ 5 but refuse to pay over MSRP, the Inside EVs forum has a thread now in the IONIQ 5 subforum with members sharing dealerships around the country who aren't adding that extra markup, those market adjustments they call it sometimes. Or sometimes they give you a package of, you know, they throw in a package of, I don't know, ceramic finish and extra warranty, I don't know, products, just different things you might not need. And, you know, then stick another $3,000, $5,000 on there. So anyway, if you're interested in paying like the minimum, you can find that thread on the Inside EVs forum. So we can talk about the other two videos in a moment, but I think the one that most people are most interested in is your 70 mile an hour range test. Now, Tom is going to do a range test of the same car this weekend. So this is going to be something of a battle royale, maybe without the whole dying part.
Well, so, they're different cars. They won't be the same specification. So right. Tom's is an all-wheel drive limited that he's driving on the 20-inch wheels. It's on Michelin Pilot Sport EV tire specifically. The 19-inch OE tire is not an EV-specific tire. So, you know, there's just a different tire size, wheel size. In terms of the car itself, pretty much identical, but this was an SEL all-wheel drive, which has no glass roof and you know, a few other things like no subwoofer in the back. So it should have done better, but we had 2 people in the car. You know, this is just plus minuses. Temperature for ours is going to be, sounds like, warmer than Tom's test, although not by much because we did finish around freezing temperatures. So yeah, I'll be curious to see how both do. We've heard tons of reports of IONIQ 5 just not doing well in terms of range. And so 227.4 miles, I think, is what this car did from a 100 to 0% 70 mile per hour constant. We had amazing conditions during our run. We didn't come off of 70 miles an hour once, except for a 1.5 mile stretch where we did about 65. But this is common because usually at the end of the test anyway, we slow down. So fairly good test, I would say. And it was a nice car to drive. Great driver assistance in IONIQ 5.
So you think Tom's going to have a hard time like beating your range number? I don't know.
Well, there's not really any competition there because we don't care. Like, it does, the car does what the car does. Who came up with this?
So if you're watching this, if you're not watching this on YouTube, we just popped up this graphic that our viewer, Chris Largent, put together for us. And Tom and Kyle haven't seen this yet. But yeah, this Logney versus Connor.
That's great. That's great. You should have had him with his hat on, though. He looks a little bit more... You know, daunting when he's wearing his cowboy hat.
That's right, but, my Western hat.
The funny thing is, like, I don't know how Kyle feels about it, but for me, as Kyle mentioned, we don't care what the cars come in at. Like, we have no dog in this fight.
We actually have zero control over it, really.
Kyle, the one thing I will tell you that makes me happy is if you do it first. When I finish up and it's like within a couple of miles of what you do, like if the conditions are roughly the same, because to me that like validates what we're doing. Like, okay, he drove it in Colorado. He got 221 miles. I drove it in New Jersey. I finished up with 223. It's like, yeah, that's what this car can do. You know, if we have 30 mile difference, one of us did something wrong or the car had more capacity. Maybe, you know, for whatever reason, we got a press loaner that's been abused and the battery, you know,
all the time. That's the worst part.
Yeah. Which can happen, you know? So, you know, but I love when we both do tests and they're like 2 or 3 miles apart. To me, that's like, okay, we're proving that how we set the cars up, the protocols we follow, you know, the way we do everything, we try to be as scientific as possible, even though it's not on a closed course. When we get really close, it's like, yeah, that's it. Like, we nailed it.
So the big thing for me is in the cold weather. We started, obviously, 2 DC fast charges in one day, ran the car down, big deep charging sessions to warm everything up, brought it all the way to 100%. But I think the car, it definitely, you know, got colder throughout the drive. We definitely had a bit of a headwind towards the end because we had a tailwind leaving. So this can all cool down the battery pack. And during our drive, I kept winter mode off. And that was just a random guess, right? Some people say winter mode doesn't do anything on the car right now without software updates. I don't know how true that is. And then on the other hand, it's like, okay, if the car was trying to warm up the battery, we would have burned more energy trying to warm up the battery. But then did it get cold enough where there was actually limited capacity towards the bottom end? And so these are the tough questions. That's why I consider my test to be a cold weather test. Tom's will definitely be a cold weather test, even more so. But I think we'll be able, you know, this is my friend's car. He lives right down the street. We'll be able to use this all the time as much as we want for any test. Zach is awesome. And so we're going to do hot weather range tests. We're cold soaking it tonight, and we're going to do a cold gate test in the morning. We actually did a cold gate test earlier this week, but I'm not going to post that video because I don't know if we controlled all the variables well enough. But I will say we left the car out, you know, in his garage more or less, and it got cold. And then we plugged it into an EA station. It was 12 degrees outside, and it did like 50 or 60 kilowatts starting. I'm like, that doesn't sound right. I don't think the car was cold enough. But that's interesting indication to say maybe the U.S. cars handle cold weather better than the Euro cars that the Norwegians are complaining about. So we're going to do a proper cold soaking test. We're going to try and get an ID4, put them through the same conditions, same state of charges, and see how they plug in when cold. The really hard thing with EV6 and Ioniq 5 is getting a 0 to 100% DC fast charging test, because the cars don't have the thermal capacity to handle their theoretical peak curve on a deep charging session. So this requires 3, 4, 5 different trips to log the theoretical peak charging curve of the car. It also means that the fastest way to charge this car may not be to plug in at 0%, even though it goes to max speed. It might be to plug in at 10 or 20, where you're not going to be pulling as much current and getting a deeper session later onto the pack. I talked to some Hyundai engineers about this, actually. And I know the guy who does some of the thermal strategies in the car, and he's like, even we can't get it to do the theoretical max, and we just gave up trying, and the car just protects itself. So that's going to be the hardest thing for us, and especially with Zach, is constantly going back to the charger over a period of days and weeks to log this theoretical peak curve that the car can do. Because I've already done this with EV6 and got a really solid charging curve. And Tom, you mentioned where the car goes down to 1 kilowatt. That's common. Everyone I've seen does that. And then after a period of a few minutes, it does recover But it does take some time. Yours may not have. It sounds like yours happened at 87% state of charge. I've only ever seen it at 80% state of charge. I asked them what's going on there, and they said it's not cell balancing. It's not protecting lithium plating, which is what I thought. It's purely just checking on the battery pack, saying, hey, where are our voltages with nothing coming in? And then it rips back up to So I don't know that. I don't think yours may have been that because it was at a higher state of charge, but they're always adjusting software.
So I know the charge rate's fallen off a cliff, but honestly, I didn't see that other people experienced it going down to 1 kilowatt, which you're saying is the truth. So, I mean,
yeah, it's very common. Yeah. If you watch, I have a EV6 charging video up. If you take a look at that, you'll see every time the car gets to 80%, because I did two different sessions, it basically goes down to 6. And your car, because you started at 20% state of charge, may not have been running the air conditioning fans. Basically, what it's doing is it's saying nothing goes into the battery. It supplies the power for ancillary components, which can be different because some, you know, might have to run cooling pumps or air conditioning, whatever. And then it kind of like pulses the pack a little bit and then goes to max again.
Jeez, I mean, that's terrible. You know, like,
well, it's odd. No other car does that.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, If you're, you know, not us and just, you know, an Ioniq 5 owner and you're at a charging station and you notice that it goes down to 1 kilowatt for 5 minutes, you're going to unplug and leave, you know, like, yeah, there's
and,
no.
And you're like, that's where I think maybe you didn't experience this, at least what some of the cars do, because I've never heard of it 5 minutes. I think it's a 3 minute exactly checking situation, and this may adapt. So you'll see, you know, here around 81%, we're doing 117, 124 kilowatts. And then eventually,
if I skip back a little bit there, yeah, if I pause it there. So you're at 81% and it's gone to 1.4 kilowatts.
Yeah. So that's just what they do. I don't think it's good it's definitely not good, but it's like, I think it's just early software. It's like, hey, is everything okay in the battery pack? That's the way they explained it to me. This was right from their engineers. So I don't know why it would do that. I also don't know for sure if the battery pack in this Kia EV6 was identical to a US one. They did say it was a 77 kilowatt hour car. And they only, because I was supposed to do an Ioniq 5 in Europe too. We just honestly ran out of time. And that car, they were like, hey, when you do all your tests, make sure you tell everyone that it's not a US spec battery. Kia was like, I think it's US spec. We know the suspension calibration's a little different, but we're not sure what you're getting over there. So it was a little bit confusing. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Tom will do all the US spec stuff here pretty soon. What I'm curious about, though, is what people think about the range test. And I've had a mix of that's really good and that's really bad.
Right. So Nathan Green, yeah, circling back to that, Nathan Green was saying, I got to say, I was disappointed in the 70 mile an hour range for the Ioniq 5. And I've seen similar comments online. So the EPA number is what, 256 miles?
Yeah, 256 or 258.
And you got 227 at 70 miles an hour. So it doesn't seem like super. Do you think is it terrible?
Well, it was cold. It's just hard to say. It's not good. I wouldn't say this thing's great. You know, it's not magically efficient like we've seen from Kona and original Ioniq, which were amazingly efficient. This is a totally different car. It seems to be really affected by wind, because heading out on our range test, we had like a 5 mile an hour tailwind. We're getting 3.2, 3.3 miles per kilowatt hour. And then on the way back, we averaged out. Actually, it dipped under 3 for a short period of time. But this is why we run a loop style test, because there's also a couple hundred feet of elevation between things over these distances. So, you know, we zero out the elevation by the end. But essentially,
you think it might be aerodynamics?
Really affected by wind.
You think it might be aerodynamics then?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have great aero. So this is why I'm curious with EV6. When we get the EV6 here to test, we're going to run it side by side with the Ioniq 5. We're going to drag race.
That'd be great.
We're going to do everything side by side, because Zach has one. So now we can use his. And my dad will have his Ioniq 5 limited that we could bring out here if we need to for a higher spec car. But I really like that Zach has the SEL, because it's on the 19-inch wheels. And it's sort of unique, because all of the media cars, they only put the top specs in the media cars.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. So anything else you want to say about that video or this test?
Yeah. So I think the big question is really, did the cold weather affect battery capacity at low state of charge? Because the car was still pretty snappy all the way until like well past 0%. So I don't know if it was just an indicated thing. Definitely throttle went soft and I was like, oh, it's about to die. We better plug this thing in. So it went all the way out as usual. But not hugely impressive. The big question is, what's the rear wheel drive going to do? Because that's rated at 303 miles. And this disconnects the front motor on the highway. So essentially, it's a rear-wheel drive Ioniq 5 with an extra couple hundred pounds, maybe at most, that it's hauling around. Right. And there's no way there's a 50-mile range gap there.
That's why I'm so surprised that that range rating is so much different, Kyle. You know what? It should be disconnected. It should be a rear-wheel drive vehicle the way we're driving them. So it's going to be interesting.
Even the EPA number should be higher. You would think, you would expect it to be, closer to between 303 and 257.
Yeah, I would think so. Also, it's a little puzzling, but we'll keep testing them and we'll try to find out what's going on with them. And I'm gonna do like Kyle, DC fast charge mine up because it's gonna be really cool. When Kyle did his test, it was warmer and then it got colder as the test went on. It's gonna be the opposite for me. When I start in the morning, it's probably gonna be in the teens, like 15 to 17 degrees, and then it's gonna get up to about 25, a warm 25. But I am going to drive it to Electrify America charging station and DC fast charge it up before I get on the highway completely. I'm going to get there real pretty low state of charge, not empty, but pretty low. So it really pulls and warms up the battery and gives it the best opportunity to have good, range representation.
So it looks like somebody has watched your videos, Kyle. Anthony C is saying special kudos to Ioniq 5 for getting 112 kilowatts on the CPE 250. So,
hello, fellow nerd. This was the biggest excitement of my day because... You want to explain why, Dominic?
I'll explain what a CPE 250 is first, is all.
Yeah. So CPE 250 are the charge point DC fast chargers, and they can be arranged in multiple configurations, typically found between 50 and 62.5 kilowatt peak rated as a standalone. Occasionally, you'll find a grouping of them, so 2, 4, 6, and these are typically paired in two, where it's 262.5 kilowatts, basically 125 kilowatt. And then if you plug in another car, it force splits to 62.5 each. Up until this point, when you plug into a 125 kilowatt charger, I've never really seen more than 80 or 90 on a 400 volt car.
Definitely not 125 kilowatts.
And then even Taycan, which is an 800 volt chassis, 7 and a bit. So is the Ioniq 5. They're not 800. They're like 6 is dead, 7's middle, and almost 8 full. The voltage is fluctuation. They're fluctuating based on state of charge. It's actually the other way around. Doesn't matter. The interesting thing is Ioniq 5, which is also an 800 volt car. We tried three different stations. Both did 45 kilowatts, or all the other ones did like 39, 40, 41 kilowatts. And we're like, this doesn't make any sense. Is the car saying, hey, I'm an 800 volt car, but I'm actually only telling you I'm 400 volts, but I'm asking for the current of an 800 volt system, which would add up to that 80 or 90 ish peak that I've seen out of these units. And then the last station we tried, I'm like, it's not going to do anything. Let's just try the last one. Boom, right up to 90 ish. And then it walked its way up to over 100. And it's the most I've ever seen is 112 kilowatts on a CPE 250 feeding an Ioniq 5 at low state of charge. And I have no reason to believe it wouldn't do the full 125 at higher state of charge. It's pretty impressive. Even Taycan can't do this. Taycan peak was 96 kilowatts on this. I don't know why. It must be different software because that's the only thing I can think of from a charging perspective. But only one of the four units there seemed to deliver the power.
Right.
It'd be interesting to plug in an air, Kyle, on one of those units because that voltage is even higher.
Yeah, that would be great. I don't think Lucid will ever send me one here. But if they do one day magically respond to one of my emails, I will gladly take an air and do all the stuff with it.
Right on. All right. So anything else we want to... Oh, no. So you did the range test with the Ioniq 5. You did the owner's buy-in experience with the Ioniq 5. But you also did a couple comparison videos, which I'd recommend people watching. So you've compared it directly with the Volkswagen ID.4 and is the Ford Mustang Mach-E as well. So I don't know if you want to quickly just tell us about these two videos or how they matched up.
Yeah, so they're all extremely similar. You can tell Ioniq 5 looked at, here's the market, and we're just going to go a little bit better in certain areas, a little bit worse in others. You can't go wrong with any of these cars. Mach-E, ID4, Ioniq 5, EV6, XC40 Recharge. They're all, and Model Y, of course, they all accomplish pretty much the same thing. And the big thing for me is, if you're not road tripping a ton, then there's not really a huge advantage to the Ioniq 5 over the others, because the Ioniq 5's advantage comes from the nerdy stuff. It's the 800 volts, which you don't feel 800 volts when you're driving. They all drive the same, right? Right. It might be a little bit snappier. It's a quick car, it really is, but like, it makes no difference to your daily life. So it's all about, if you're going to take a lot of trips or if you have to rely on DC fast charging, then the Ioniq 5 just will actually save you time. And to me, that's really important. So I think that's the way it is. 50 state available. Just, you got a plane and a car, go pick one up and bring it home. They're everywhere now.
I think there will be 50 state by the end of the year or something.
Yeah. And even states that aren't supposed to get them are getting them. Like, I heard there was stuff, someone commented in Oklahoma, North Carolina is getting them. North Carolina has a ton. For some reason, and
I think North Carolina might have been on the original list, because it is the ZEV states, and there was a few other states that had higher
ZEV
volumes.
Plus nine states.
Yeah. But one thing I will note. Sorry to interrupt you, Kyle. Yeah. Kia is rolling out the EV6 nationwide. They're not doing what Hyundai did with the Ioniq 5. Mid February, they want to have EV6s in every state. So.
Wow.
I've called up my Kia dealer here actually to see when they're going to have an EV6, because I have a friend who's looking to buy a car like pretty much now. So I think they said it's coming to Tallahassee, maybe the end of the month, the first vehicle or vehicles. But so that's, you know.
Well, I know they're going to start arriving in dealerships middle of February.
Right. Yeah. So I think, you know, for me, when I compare these cars, it's so clear that for my use case, the Ioniq 5 is by far the superior vehicle, because I spend so much time on the road and because I like to analyze the latest and greatest in charging hardware and the cars. I am a very unique use case of a vehicle owner. So I think for most people, ID4, Mach-E, Ioniq 5, whichever is available and at sticker at this point, might be your determining factor. Right. I think it's not hard to find these cars at sticker. I'm glad Zach bought this thing and paid five over, because we get to make videos with it. I mentioned I would never do that. I would just find a car anywhere in the country and drive it here. There's a great network of CCS chargers that can get you pretty much anywhere you need to go. And I would have just found a car somewhere at sticker, picked it up and driven it home.
Right.
And yeah, one thing I will say about Kyle just mentioned how, you know, the Ioniq 5 would be, you know, a great car for him. I've only had this for a couple of days now, but I echo that sentiment. It's quickly becoming my favorite EV.
Oh, really?
So far. Yeah, I absolutely love driving this damn thing. And would I say that I recommend it for everyone? Well, I've said on record many times that I recommend the ID4 for a lot of people that ask me about that. And that's not going to change, because I think, you know, if you have a big family, if you need to haul some stuff around, the ID4 is bigger. It's got more cargo space. It might be a better family car. I don't have any kids here. It's just me and my wife. And for us, I could easily say that I would consider selling my Model 3 and buying the all-wheel drive Ioniq 5. That's how much I love it so far. Only 2 days in, and I'm like, I don't want to give this thing back to Hyundai. Super, super impressed with it. I love how it looks. I've had friends look at it and be like, God, that thing's terrible. And I'm like, I love this thing. I love the pixel theme that they have. And the pixels are everywhere. They're right on the roof of the inside of the vehicle, the ceiling liner. They're in the seats. They're on the dashboard. There's little pixels there. Like, Hyundai has hidden these things everywhere you look. You might have to look hard, but there's that pixel theme on everything. And I love the way the lights look. I just love the whole... the whole driving experience to me has been fantastic. This would be, if I was getting this type of a vehicle right now, and I know we have a lot, we have the Mach-E, the ID4, you know, we've got a bunch of vehicles coming out, even the EV6, this would be my buy. I love this thing, and Tesla, I don't want to give it back.
Tesla Model Y from the Gigafactory?
There's the big thing, though. That's the big question. If you're recommending cars to someone, which I always recommend ID4, you can't ignore the Tesla thing because Model Y is significantly more expensive. There are significant wait times. But when you look at the overall cost of a Model Y, they hold their value so well. They've proven to hold their value so well that maybe you got to front a bit more. Either way, if you go Mustang Mach-E, ID4, Ioniq 5, Model Y, if you forget the initial upfront cost, your overall ownership, let's say for 12-month period, it's all going to be about the same. It's all going to be almost nothing. I mean, assuming the car market doesn't just tank back down, which I'm not expecting it will. I think we'll be in this inflated period for a while. And so to me, the Model Y is still the easiest EV to live with because you have a great supercharging network. It has route planning. It does preconditioning on the way to chargers. It's got a great app, none of which the Hyundai has and none of which the ID4 has and none of which, well, Mach-E does have good route planning, but, you know, and plug and charge. So that's probably the closest experience that you could have, I would say. The big thing for me, though, was with the Ioniq 5 and the ID4 parked next to each other, which everyone knows I love the ID4 because it's so boring that it doesn't get in my way and doesn't bug me. And people are saying you should talk about Tesla's quality issues. I've owned three personally. I can only speak from personal experience. Not really many issues at all. Better than most.
Right.
And I would say better than the other cars, my feeling would be actually.
I feel like Tesla's under a special microscope. So anything that goes wrong in a Tesla gets like magnified out of proportion. Other vehicles have, you know, quality issues as well. And I don't. I'm really excited to see what happens with the Austin Gigafactory if that changes perceptions of it. You know, as far as like the quality, and as well as like just performance, like the weight of the vehicle because it has the integrated battery pack and everything.
So I think like if I'm just driving around right for a week and all of these cars are parked next to each other that are this thumbnail right here, the one that I would probably drive every day is the ID4. It's the softest, the most comfortable, the best seating position, great steering wheel, really good response. I love the all-wheel drive system, having a very strong rear bias. And like, even though it's not a performance car, it can do the performance stuff well. I think as a second car from that, I would probably pick Ioniq 5 because of insane charging, great driving dynamics, very similar driving dynamics to ID4, amazing driver assistance, great technology. Then it would probably be Model Y because it handles so well. It's got amazing software, except for maybe the new version 10 update, but really good sound system. Like everything in the Model Y just works really well. And then Mach-E last for driving around town. Now, in terms of range, Mach-E, I think, is very impressive.
Yeah, Mach-E does it well on the highway.
Yes, it does. It's a good road tripper. Good road tripper.
And somebody just asked, do the Ioniq 5 and EV6 have plug-in charge? And the answer is no, they do not. We asked Kia about that at the EV6 press drive, and the reps just kind of looked at each other and were like, yeah, we don't have that yet.
Also, something to consider, Volkswagen still no plug and charge with Electrify America, which they can make up any excuse they want. That's silly.
And also, they promised it by the end of 2021.
Yep. Oh, really?
If you remember that earlier in the year, it will be plug and charge capable, the ID4, by the end of 2021.
And we had
February now, 2022.
The other thing is Mach-E has plug and charge, but you can't use your Pass Plus membership. So as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't have plug and charge either.
Kyle, I think that's been fixed.
Really?
When I was talking to the Ford reps on the Intelligent Backup Pro, they brought up the point that I told them that shortly after the Mach-E launched, when I was at Ford doing the F-150 Lightning test ride around the track.
They had known about it by then.
The guys that I talked to were like, what do you mean you can't do it? And I'm explaining it to them. And I'm like, yeah, you have to pay the top. You can't link it to your America's first. And they were kind of like, well, we have to fix that. And I was like, yeah. So the funny thing is they followed up with, after I came home, they followed up with me and said, Tom, please explain this to us again, what you were telling us. And if you can send us links, because I said, I've been talking about this on the podcast. I wrote an article where we mentioned it, and they said, please send us those links. So I sent them all that stuff. So now I'm talking to them fast forward 8 months later on Intelligent Backup Pro. And one of the guys brought it up and said, you know, we thank you for making us aware of that. We were not aware that was the case. And we fixed it, and we're sending out an email to our Mach-E owners soon that's going to explain what to do and that it'll eliminate that problem. So,
okay, but at least as of today,
I don't know. The way they made it sound is that it's fixed. It's just,
I was with Patrick Anderson from Mach-E Vlog a few days ago, who's tapped into everything Mach-E, and even he was saying at, you know, this is just three days ago, that it's like, this sucks. So maybe it's been fixed this week.
I'll get clarification today. I'll get an email.
8 months ago.
Yeah. I'll email the person that told me that it was fixed just last week and see where the status is at.
Because that solves so many problems. Now you can actually use Plug and Charge, and Mach-E Plug and Charge, they have done some amazing work in making it very reliable. Mm-hmm. Remember early days how sketchy it was, Plug and Charge? And then now it's seamless and it works. I think every time I've used it in recent memory, it's just plugged in, worked, walked away, no issues. It's great.
And Kyle, it's always worked for me. We talked about this a while ago. You had issues with it. I made a video of it. I got the use of a Mach-E before they even gave them out to press loans in December of 20, I guess.
You did the first public plug and charge.
And it worked first. It worked first shot. And then when I got the car like a month, because I didn't get the car at that point, John Volker had it and he brought it over to my house because he was one of the few people picked for the Car of the Year award. So they get to drive the cars. And he had it like a month before anybody else did. And he said, hey, you know, you want me to bring this over to your house? John's an awesome stand-up guy like that. And he did. So I was able to record the plug and charge. And it always worked for me. I've never had an unsuccessful Mach-E plug and charge. I've had them on the Taycan, but never on a Mach-E.
Yeah, I've had them on Taycan because actually, I don't think I've ever done a plug and charge with Taycan because all of the Taycans that we drive are owned by Porsche and they're not set up. But one of my colleagues, Ben, owns a Taycan. He just got it a few weeks ago and he's been road tripping it all around. And he says plug and charge has been working great so far for him.
It's worked for me.
They fixed a lot of this stuff.
It's also worked for me every time on the air. So maybe they have that worked out. I've done three or four charging sessions with the air now, and it's always plugged in and just worked.
It feels like we're kind of naturally pivoting to the next story, which is about Electrify America and that big survey that was done comparing charging networks.
So,
it wasn't really a survey, Martin. It was actually a field test.
I got in trouble for what I said about this, which was it was wrong, and I disagreed with the results, and then people called me out and said,
Who called you?
It was anyone who drives a Mustang Mach-E said, you're completely wrong, because the field test said that Electrify America was the best charging network, and I said, no, that's absolutely wrong. Yes, their chargers may be in good locations, and if the shops near them are open, that's all good, but there is no comparison to the Tesla supercharging network, where every time you turn up to that in the vehicles that can use it at the minute in the US, because it's not opened up, you plug the car in and you walk away. And you know that Tesla is charging.
Yeah, but Martin, the article doesn't say that. You
never plug a Tesla in and go like, I better hold on by the car here because it fails half the time. You just
Tesla
walk away.
Tesla lost points because it didn't have a data screen on their chargers, but it's all
you don't
in the
need
car.
It. You don't need it. The whole result was wrong, but then the Mach-E owners got in touch and were like, look, we've got plug and charge. Electrify America is the same as the Tesla experience. You are, you know, a total Tesla fanboy. And everyone knows I have dreams about Elon Musk. Yeah, right. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Martin.
I was like, you couldn't be talking to the wrong person.
Martin, let me set this up a little bit for y'all so people know what we're talking about. So Tom wrote about this. Apparently, Charge Electric Vehicle Magazine, in conjunction with an outfit called Umlaut, published a ranking of DC fast charging networks called Best in Test 2021. And the winner was, drumroll, Electrify America. Now, not to downplay Electrify America, which has made great strides in the quality and experience and continues to expand their network, but I think most people were kind of surprised by this because, you know, they didn't choose a Tesla supercharger network, which has more locations and maybe a better user experience overall. So, Tom, maybe you can fill us in on what's going on here.
Sure. And just to add to that, this is the second year that they did this test starting last year was the first year, and Electrify America won that also. But last year, the Tesla supercharger network was not included. And Umlaut's reasoning for that was, look, it's a proprietary network. It's going to be very difficult for us to compare the Tesla network to Blink you know, Green Lots, Electrify America, ChargePoint, all that, because the basis of the network is different, you know. So, but they said so many people told us that we have to include them, that this year we're going to incorporate them into the test. And they even admitted in their like report that this has been very difficult to try to compare these because it's not apples to apples, but we did the best we can. And, you know, as with any test, any, you know, comparison, the devil's always in the details. This doesn't, in my opinion, doesn't come out and say, you know, Electrify America network is better than the Tesla supercharging network. It's a better user experience, because I don't think very many people would necessarily agree with that. And I wrote my article, you know, I explained that, you know, you just pull up to the Tesla supercharger, you plug in, you walk away, and it just always works. You know, I wrote that in this article, but I tried to explain why Umlaut and Charge, well, Umlaut is the one that tested this, what the details were of this specific charging comparison. And if you set the rules the way they're set, then you follow what they're testing for. Yes, Electrify America's points added up slightly higher than the supercharger network. And the real basis for that is what was brought up originally, is that they remove the cars from this equation, which you can't do when you're comparing charging network, because the car is part of it. But that's what they did. It was for the performance of the charging station alone. So any data or anything that the car gave you had to be excluded. It was just the charging station. So the fact that Tesla, a lot of their data is in the center display screen when you're supercharging, it's not either displayed on the charging station or in an app. Tesla does have an app, but it's not as robust as, say, the ChargePoint app or the Electrify America app that really gives you a lot of information that the Tesla app doesn't, because it's shown sitting there in the car. So that was number one. That was a big problem in rating them. And, you know, in my opinion, honestly, you know, Tesla does nothing better than the Tesla Supercharger Network. But if you follow the guidelines that they set for this test, the points add up properly. And I'm not saying that the Electrify America network has a better charging experience than the Tesla supercharger network, but the devil's in the details on how you set up the test. And if you set it up this way and you really read the whole, you know, we just did an overview on Inside EVs. If you really want to read the whole deep details of this, go to Charged Electric Vehicle Magazine, because they have like a 5,000 word article that really explains all the testing methodology and why it was done the way it was done. If you follow that, then it makes sense. But this program, this test, in my opinion, doesn't even try to say that the overall experience of Electrify America is better than the supercharger. And let me just say one last thing on that, because the way it was conducted was they went and picked the best sites, the highest rated sites on PlugShare for all of these different networks. So they picked the Electrify America sites that had 10 out of 10, the Tesla sites that were 10 out of 10, the electric, you know, ChargePoint, all that. So they went and tested in the best of the best. So there wasn't any downtime. They plugged in and it worked, because there's some sites on all of these networks that just don't work properly. We all know that. Kyle and I have rolled into a ChargePoint site, an Electrify America site, and plugged in, and we had to go to another charging station and then another one, and then it only delivers half the amount of power. They took that out of the equation. This was based on how do the best charging stations in each network work. So that's not representative of what the average person experiences, because we experience the good stations and also the poor stations. So in my, you know, opinion, that was a bigger flaw than not including the car itself.
This whole test sounds a little flawed to me. I mean, sorry to whoever did it, but you know, I just don't understand how it doesn't really relate for everyday people, you know, in their experiences. I don't think, right? Am I missing something?
Well, there's no, a million ways to conduct a test, and I'll let Kyle jump in too. There's a million ways you can conduct a test. This specific test did a specific purpose, and that's the score. And if you really follow the methodology, the scores are correct. I'm not saying that means that this is the best, you know, test that there is. It's not. It's a flawed test in some ways. But this specific test was done this way, and that's the scores.
Yeah, so I know the guys at Umlaut that did the test, and I was going to be involved with it, but got super busy. This was earlier last year. We were talking about conducting a U.S. side of this test. They also do this in Europe as well. And so, this was before I knew the testing procedures and sort of the way they were approaching it. I'm kind of glad I didn't get involved because it's not how I would have run a test. Look, at the end of the day, when you add up the numbers, Electrify America won. There are, it's in all their materials now. They are the best charging network out there. Let them have some fun with this and revel in their success. And honestly, they are pretty amazing as what they have accomplished, to go from zero to now rated the best here. That's awesome. But, I got to say, when I recommend a car to someone and they do a lot of road trips and they're not into EVs, it's going to be a Tesla just because you roll up, it's easy. And it's not even always about the charging stations. It's also about the integration of the cars with the charging network, which this did not take into account really at all. It's just the vertical integration of the Tesla cars and the supercharger network is really what sets it apart from anything else. Now, I will say we're starting to see more cars integrate with Electrify America now. Specifically, Mercedes EQS is a really good example. It will tell you which station you need to charge at, how many are available, which stations are available, and now we're starting to get there. And I think we've seen really good stuff from the Android system and Polestar and Volvo with some of the newer updates as well. So it's getting better. It's all good.
That's good to hear. And then the new Taycan software, if it's not rolled out already, will tell you which ones are 350 kilowatt chargers and which ones aren't and what's available and et cetera.
So here now. Yep.
That's getting better. And of course, this survey also included things like location. And there are some Tesla superchargers that if you turn up on your own and you're maybe a woman turning up on her own in the middle of the night, that they are in some sketchy locations and there are some amazing locations. Whereas Electrify America, I haven't used them all, but I gather if you turn up and it's not nighttime, tend to be around places, parking lots that have got shops and conveniences attached
Walmart.
To them. So yeah, like this, Walmart. This. Okay. So it's Walmart. Yeah,
but we had a shooting in our Walmart parking lot the other day. So
oh, deep joy. Okay. Well, stay in your car. Stay in your car.
The charging stations, the Electrify America can't say Walmarts are can't provide security to Walmart. Walmart, that's on them. It's their parking lot.
Right? No, yeah, that's not on. That's not on.
You
can't judge America's perceived safety of being around their chargers. But right. I think there could be some interesting work done on the safety front when it comes to charging.
Agreed. So this has tried to do a very interesting thing, this study. But I do think it's I think it's misleading because. Well, it should be about ease of use. I think that it should disproportionately score ease of use higher. And of course, if you're turning up in a car that's got plug-in charge, etc., then that's fine. But if you're not, that scores other networks down. And as you know, I'm not a Tesla owner, and I have critical things to say about the company. So I'm not. There's no drum to beat here. I think Tesla.
I have an EQS coming in a couple of weeks. I'm going to put some friends in it. And that have no idea what an electric car even is, and just be like, you have 10% state of charge. Good luck.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. That'd be a nice video. That's like
the car should route them to the nearest Electrify America station down in Lublin. Okay. And the car supports plug and charge. So they should be able just to figure out how to just at least this connector. Oh, that looks like this hole. Plug it in and it should work. And if great test.
That's a good premise for like a reality TV show.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Episode.
Absolutely.
But, I was charging last week or so on a grid surf charger over here, and a Tesla pulled in next to me, and the guy was maybe 30, switched on, had a Model 3, two young kids in the back. Like, this guy's not a dummy. And he looked at the charger and was like, "What do I do?" And that was genuinely, he said, "I've never not charged on a supercharger." And actually, grid serve is easy. I said, you plug it in first, you wave your Apple Pay or your card on that card reader, and off it goes, and it's charging. And he's like, "Oh, okay, it's fine." But and there are instructions on the front of the unit, but still, his reaction was, "Oh, what do I do here? I've only ever used superchargers," which I thought was interesting. He could have worked out on his own without me telling him what to do, but still.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a legitimate point. It goes back to what Kyle said earlier about, you know, recommending people, like somebody that's new to electric vehicles, you know, the Tesla Supercharger network is just so easy. It's so easy to say, just get a Tesla. You know, if you're concerned about, if you're doing a lot of road trips and you're worried about figuring it out, I've never pulled up to a Tesla Supercharger where I had to help somebody charge their car. Never. And I think I'm running at a rate of about 30%. That's unscientific, but about a third of the times that I show up to a ChargePoint DC fast charger or an Electrify America DC fast charge station, I'm assisting someone to get their car charged. And, you know, that's it's at least a third of the time. Now, most of the times I'm successful. I will say every now and then the person leaves and it just wouldn't charge, or they're having some kind of problem. Could be the car's fault. I don't know. But that's, you know, Tesla just makes it so easy. It's impossible to say that the overall charging experience on any network is better than what Tesla provides. It's absolutely impossible to say that. But what I will say is that if you remove Tesla, like the Supercharger network, Electrify America should be rated the best of the rest of the DC fast charge networks.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is the best charging experience, and they do have the most super high speed chargers, and they're the only company that has plug-in charge enabled. And, you know, they have great customer service. You know, if you do have a problem, I will tell you, their customer service is second to none. And I've called all the other companies' customer service, EVgo, ChargePoint, you know, having difficulty in the past. Electrify America, their hotline is by far the best. So,
and they're,
you know,
the nicest people.
Yeah, they are. I've never had anyone give me an attitude, and yeah, I've given them an attitude. And you expect them to give it back. Me.
What a shocker.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, after like the third station you plug into and you're kind of in a rush, you know, and it's like, you know, this, you've got to get this thing to work for me, damn it. You know, but, you know, and, yeah, and
that's early EA days. They'll
kill you with kindness until you're like, they just talk you down. Listen, you're upset. You're on a road trip. You need to get somewhere. You're fiddling with it, trying to get it to plug in. It starts charging, then it shuts off. And these are early days is what I'm saying, but their customer service is phenomenal. However, they must put a lot of, effort and energy and money into training these people, because you're just hiring someone off the street, they're not that nice to you. So they must stress that you have to be nice to these people, because they're, you know, they're anxious, they're trying to get charged. So I will say that this isn't like total rubbish. You know, the Tesla Supercharger network is, in my opinion, by far the best overall experience that you can have with charging. But outside of that, it is Electrify America, in my opinion, at this point.
Sure. And as we said before, it's improving with plug-in charges. That gets rolled out to more models, and it becomes even better with a shorter handshake period of time. Maybe will happen, because Tesla's handshake, you know, when you first plug it in for it all to start charging, you know, they talk to each other. We call that a handshake.
So quick.
Yeah, it's really quick on the Tesla. And, you know, others are slower, but, you know, there's room for improvement, and things are improving. And yeah.
I wouldn't say things are improving in terms of shorter handshake times.
Not yet. No, that's just a future target.
But I will say Tesla with CCS has a shorter handshake time than anyone else.
Really?
So, when I had the Model Y in Europe, you would think it would follow CCS, whatever it is. I plugged a Tesla into a Chem Power station. That thing started charging in like 2 seconds. It was awesome.
And also what's weird is that now they're opening up the Tesla Superchargers in not only the Netherlands but in Norway and France as well. The videos that I've watched online of people trying it and playing it is they plug the car in first, then you open the Tesla app and you select the stall that you're at and you hit go, and the damn green light on this was Björn's Polestar 2, it starts flashing, and like you look at the data and it's charging. I'm like, that was like a 3 second hand, what? So yeah, the handshake,
I don't know what else is going on.
I don't know what Tesla have done.
We should just,
well, they do have that is part of this test. You could see one of the charts that I put in the post has time to start charging and then time to end charging, and the superchargers crush everybody. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Someone said it's because Tesla chargers do not have to get payment approval. That's actually wrong. They do have to do VIN recognition and payment, but also you can pre-activate an Electrify America station before plugging in, which goes through the payment authentication window first
which is then it's just like, okay, charger's activated. Now it's hook up the car to the charger. So, and it's not just Electrify America. I'm not singling them out. It's ChargePoint, it's EVgo. There's just longer handshakes outside of Tesla.
Right. All right.
You see Tesla down at the bottom of this chart, time-wise, 8.49 seconds to initiate the charge.
Awesome.
Electrify America's 26.9, ChargePoint 12, but ChargePoint's pretty good too. But look at Tesla, how it crushes it. And then look at, there's a little green bar chart to end the session. 1.67 seconds. You know, like you almost can't see it, you know.
Done.
So
get out. Yeah. Move on.
So speaking of move on, before we should move on, because we got to leave. We have a hard, Martin's got a hard stop here coming up. So I just want to mention also that the Tesla supercharger experiment or trial has opened up in Europe. So it's all of France now. And Martin, do you know?
I don't think it's all of France.
No. It's selected. It's like 9 or 10 in France and
10
in Norway. And I can't work out the criteria for the ones they've chosen. I had people suggest to me because it was not near other fast chargers, and then that was shot down pretty rapidly by my French listeners that said no, there's loads of Ionity around there, and somebody else suggested it's just because they're big V3 stations and they picked those ones in France and Norway because one of them is it's called Nebenez. Just it's huge.
Right, they have the capacity for extra cars, maybe.
Yeah. And it's not going to just, you know, annoy Tesla owners because they've picked
that makes sense.
Yeah, so that might be the criteria they've picked, but...
Yeah, but we've seen Nebenez full of Teslas before on travel days.
Yeah. So...
This will be interesting.
They picked a good time of year. You know, people aren't doing road trips for the holidays to the cabins. That people aren't driving across Europe in the summer holidays. That tends to be a big deal with road tripping across Europe. So it's a good time of year to test it, to try it. I've got it on my Tesla app, even though I'm in the south of England, because I just changed my address to a random address in Paris, and now the Tesla app thinks I'm in France, which seems to be the how it tells whether you should have that option to initiate a charge. So if you are road tripping, I'm not saying that this you should do this, but if you are road tripping and you are not in, because the Tesla FAQ clearly says you can only use this if you are a resident of France, Norway, Netherlands, Germany as well. But I've changed my address just in my Tesla account to Paris, and it's now at the top, and I can, you know, quite easily click on it, and it's, well, that's where I live, and it puts the map where I am, but I can move across to France and say, you know, search this region, and all of a sudden it brings up all of the ones in France that are you know, that are available, and I can just click on one of those, select the stall that I'm at, and hit start charge. And I can sign up for the monthly $12.99 subscription, which lowers the kilowatt hour cost as well. So if you are road tripping and you're not in any of those countries, I mean, don't turn up with 0%. And if it doesn't work, don't blame me. But
Martin, you should go. Just take the Euro tunnel train.
Go visit your place on the Champs-Élysées.
Yeah, why not? I'll take the MG over.
Yeah. Also wanted to mention the US got some updates. We got this cool little Tesla calculator. I feel like I'm a Tesla fanboy this episode, but I think a lot of people have been complaining that I've been so anti-Tesla. I'm really kind of neutral on that. I don't care. But I got this thing where now it'll tell you in the app all of your charging, your costs, and everything. So I've only spent $16 for 1,400 kilowatt hours of it because I have free charging here at our CSU office and then also free supercharging. So that's pretty neat.
So is that home and away charging all in one?
Yeah, it's home, supercharging, and away. So, and I can put in all my crazy time of use hours, so it tracks everything, and it goes back 31 days.
That's cool.
Now, there are other services like TesLab and TeslaFi that I've used forever. So this is not new information to me, but to a lot of people who don't use those services and only use what comes with the cars, now they have a little bit more info.
Right. Hey, so I want to hit a couple of headlines really, really quick before we leave. We can expect to see the Lexus RZ 450e launch, debut or whatever, fully officially sometime this spring. That's one thing. There's a couple pictures on Inside EVs you can check out, some new pictures. But also one more bigger news probably is GM released its Q4 2021 financial results. And along with that, they released some reservation numbers for Hummer EV and Silverado EV. 59,000 Hummer EV reservations, which is a lot more than I kind of expected to see. but 110,000 Silverado.
There's the big story.
Fleet,
fleet and customer. So it's Ford has their number was 200,000. They stopped it there, but that was only that didn't include fleets. So this is fleets and private owners together. But it's also just been a few weeks, right?
It's that's like, insane, and it's $100 a reservation, I think.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's only been like 3 weeks, maybe.
Oh, and they also mentioned they're going to open. So they mentioned that, and they also mentioned that they're going to have a third factory producing electric pickup trucks. They just announced, a big investment in Orion, where they make the Chevy Bolt EV now, and that will be making, Chevrolet Silverado EVs and GMC Sierra EVs, or whatever they call the GMC version of that truck.
Was it 600,000 truck capacity a year by 24 or 25? Or maybe I'm thinking of Ford.
That's serious.
Yeah, it's a big truck number.
Right.
Yeah.
I know we got to jump off, but one of the things that I think helped Chevy get so many front-loaded is I know people that didn't realize the F-150 Lightning was coming out, and by the time they did, it was a month after reservations, and they were like, well, I'm not even going to reserve one now because it's going to take me 2 years to get one. So there were people that would have reserved an F-150 Lightning but realized they're so far in the queue, they can't get one, and they were all waiting for this for the Silverado reservations to open up and just jumped in because they know with these vehicles, if you don't get in early, you're going to be waiting a year or two to get one. Yeah. So I think that helped them get so many reservations so quickly.
Mm.
All righty. So a couple more items really quickly. The Skoda Enyaq Coupe debuted as VW's ID5 Checkmate. That's a great little headline there from, I think it was Andre did that. Anyway.
Well, let's have a look. Dan.
Dan, actually, our Romanian editor. And also the Lucid Air Dream Editions. If you want one, you can get one on eBay, but they're all over $200,000.
I don't know how I feel about this. Like, there's so few of these in the world. Like, did these people, these three that are on eBay, did they buy the car knowing they were going to flip it? Or probably. Did they get it? Because one of them's got about 7 miles. One of them's got delivery mileage. So they're
just waiting for BMW Group to write the check or Daimler to write the check.
Yeah, that's true, right?
No,
that's all it is. It's all going to be companies. It's going to be Ford, GM. They all need one, and they're not calling it direct from Lucid. Right.
So I think the 240 or 250 grand one, like 80 grand over what they paid, was had delivery mileage. So they've trailered that from Arizona to Florida. And they've never even driven it. This person doesn't even want to see what the car drives like. It's like that's how it came off the trailer, and it's for sale.
Yep. Right. And then we'll get reverse engineered, and we'll see some tech maybe make it into another car one day.
What a shame. I feel sad about that, but I don't know why I do.
I don't know why you do either.
It's reality. I mean, it's the reality, but those 520 people, I romantically think that there are 520, Lucid drivers who just want to use that car and not make money from it. But it is what it is.
Right. So thanks for joining us, everybody. We really appreciate our live audience and your comments to the show. I just want to reiterate, we really appreciate you being here with us this morning. And but this brings us to the end of our show. If you have any comments or questions, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Logney at Tomalog, that's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Check out his new and improved daily what do we call these things? Podcasts?
Like the YouTube
he does something over there.
It's really great. We work together here, but I really love watching Martin do his thing on his new podcast.
That. Thank you.
Be honest, Dom. Martin pays you to say that.
How dare you?
But I don't pay him to promote State of Georgia.
He's sending me fish and chips and scones to the post.
Yeah, that's what it is.
All right, so click subscribe, please, and tap that bell icon for notifications because we have midweek shows coming up that we don't want you to miss. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.